Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Priddy.
Good evening. How are you?
I am well.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Although the pictures you were posting look like California was a pretty nice place.
It was a pretty nice place.
You weather-wise, like those, huh? Yeah. Scenery-wise, yeah.
Yeah. We were all over the place in Northern California.
Yeah.
Saw the sequoias up in and we had lunch at the John Muir Lodge. It was really lovely. And
nice.
It was snowing.
Hmm.
Then we over the weekend, we went to Half Moon Bay, where it was hot and jammed with people and dogs, interestingly enough.
Hmm.
It was a doggy beach.
Hmm.
And saw all the fishing boats come in with the live crabs and all kinds of things.
And you allegedly saw some bicycles on this trip.
I did. Nabs number 8's in the can. Boy, was it a success.
Yeah.
It was packed. Record-breaking crowds. I think they had 8,100 people come through the door over the three days. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Just wonderful. Some beautiful bikes, related products. We'll have a lot of the people who I kind of saw as we were going up and down the aisles on the show in the future. We're getting them all lined up for future interviews.
All right, good.
Yeah. I was on a panel with some big hitters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was Richard Sachs and Craig Calfee, Mike DeSalvo, who's another builder, and Gary Smith from Independent Fabrications. The discussion was really good. The room was full. And I, of course, was the token girl. But I got to say what I wanted to
say. Okay, good.
It was moderated by one of the bicycling magazine people.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice. Anyway, but I heard the weather here was just about as good as the weather there a few of the days.
Some of the days, it's been up and down like a roller coaster. I think it snowed here on Monday, and then by midweek it was in the 60s. It can't decide.
Well, so. You know, Ohio weather. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
It'll change.
Yeah.
So we need to do something that we've been talking about doing, and that is shout-outs to our wonderful donors, the people who are supporting WJCU with their dollars as well as their ears.
Yeah, Radiothon is already closed
and
for another year, but we didn't have a chance because of logistical issues to say individual thank yous to the people who gave specifically for the Outspoken Cyclist.
Which, by the way, Mark sent us an email saying, you know, your show is awesome because not only did your listeners pledge, they paid.
And promptly. Yeah.
And, you know, so we were completely closed out and everything balanced within a week. You guys are awesome.
You are awesome.
Really.
You are. So you want to kind of take this back and forth here? And
we can do that.
All right. Go ahead. Kick it off.
All right. So we want to thank Howard from Gates Mills, Ohio.
And Jack from Apex, North Carolina.
And John from Cleveland, Ohio.
Chris from Pepper Pike, Ohio.
And CM and Barbara from Silver Lake, Ohio.
And Jen from up in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Yep. Benjamin from New Albany, Ohio.
Gary from Hanover, Pennsylvania.
How come I'm getting all the Ohios and you're getting the out-of-staters? Okay. Charles from Orange Village, Ohio.
And David from Richmond Heights, Ohio.
And Stuart from Shaker Heights, Ohio.
Kirk from out in Bozeman, Montana.
And Aaron from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Sean from Modesto, California.
Oh, and I get the best one here. Karen from Dublin, Ireland. That one rocked as far as
yes.
I was concerned.
And Robert from Grinnell, Iowa.
And Mike from Akron, Ohio.
I know Mike. Thanks, Mike.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I used to work with him.
I know a lot of these people.
Frank from Houston, Texas.
Richard from Chardon, Ohio.
Kate from South Euclid, Ohio.
Yeah, I know Kate. Steve from Euclid, Ohio.
And Jerry from Cleveland Heights, Ohio.
I know him, too.
Yeah.
John from Cleveland Heights, Ohio. I know him, too.
And Loma from Cleveland Heights,
it's
Ohio.
It's Lorna.
Oh, Lorna. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
It's my old eyes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lorna.
Zach from Akron, Ohio.
And Mark from out in Columbia Station, Ohio.
And Eric from Alpharetta, Georgia.
Ray from Carrboro, North Carolina.
Kevin from Valley Village, California.
No, it's Kevin from Valley Village, California.
Oh, Valley See, it's my eyes now.
Okay. Gary from Mayfield Heights, Ohio.
Robert from Grinnell, Iowa.
Jody from Dublin, Ohio. So we have Dublin, Ireland, and Dublin, Ohio on the list.
And Jody has actually been on the show.
Yeah.
And Richard from Columbus, Ohio.
And Peter from Meriden, Connecticut.
And that's the end.
All right. Thank you, everybody
who
donated
for
Radiothon. And we're good for another year.
We are.
All right. What are we doing this week?
Well, we actually welcome back Tim Blumenthal. As you know, Tim is the president of Bikes Belong. And last week I mentioned that Bikes Belong, the League of American Bicyclists, and the Alliance for Biking and Walking are getting ready to combine their mighty forces and strengths to become one entity. And so, of course, I had to get Tim to come on and talk to us about it because he's sort of the head honcho for this. And then we have Mark Johnson. Mark is a PhD in English literature. Now, what you say, does that have to do with cycling? Well, it actually has more than you might think. He was also the guy embedded with the Garmin-Cervelo team for the 2011 season. He's written a new book about the team, The Argyle Armada, that just was published on March 2nd by Velo Press and has lots of things to tell us about the team, the racing scene, and how the book came about. It's a fascinating story. I've got news. You've got news even.
Yeah.
You even have a review.
I do.
Of a product.
I do. We'll get to that after a while.
And so let's welcome Tim Blumenthal to The Outspoken Cyclist. Tim, thanks for joining us again this evening. It's always nice to talk with you.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, I just had to talk with you when the news about an umbrella organization combining Bikes Belong, the LAB, and the Alliance for Biking and Walking showed up on my screen. So what prompted the big meeting in San Diego that came up with that announcement?
Sure. Well, really, this is something that we've been talking about. The leaders of the league, the Alliance, and Bikes Belong, we've been talking about this for, well, at least since last August, but really the roots go back to last January, January 2011.
Okay.
So, you know, really we work so well together. We work on the same things. We think our visions are really compatible. And, you know, we just have a great spirit of cooperation and almost feels like a team. The biggest difference, of course, is that our membership bases are different. The league has individual members primarily. The Alliance has state and city groups who are the backbone of their membership, and Bikes Belong has bicycle suppliers and retailers, the industry. So that was different, but I think we all just felt that it was time to talk about how we could become more effective.
Well, it's interesting. This 30, if you look back on some writing I did for Bicycle Dealer Showcase, oh man, going on 25 years, I was calling for this idea of bringing all the different factions. Now, at that time, there were not as many advocacy groups. We were really talking about bringing racing, bringing touring, bringing transportation, bringing all of that under one umbrella. And while this focuses on advocacy, it still sort of brings a lot of it together, and it's very exciting. I think it's very exciting. So do you have any idea what the structure might look like as far as, I mean, you know, you have Andy and you have you and you have, I can't remember the woman's name, Barbara, maybe, from Alliance from Biking and Walking?
No, actually, the head of the Alliance is Jeff Miller,
who
used to run the Bicycle Coalition of Maine and has been doing that for 3 or 4 years.
So what do you think the new organization might look like?
You know, I can't say for sure, except you know, essentially what we've done is we've formed what we call a transition board of directors that includes two top leaders from the league, two from the Alliance, and two from Bikes Belong. And I've been named the acting transition CEO.
Okay.
But the group of people who are working on what is the optimum structure and what is the optimum mix of programs is bigger than that. It's, you know, it's other people too.
Sure.
But, you know, so I want to be very careful because we don't absolutely know. You know, we know that the league has several very good programs, you know, principally Bicycle Friendly America with all of its sort of sub brands, and the Bike Summit is really important to bicycling, and then there are other things that they do, you know, in education and in relation to clubs and cyclist rights and, you know, et cetera. And then the Alliance, their principal thing is bringing out the best in all the state and city advocacy groups, and there are a lot more and a lot more professional people working for those groups now, and a lot of the attention, sort of the focus for the future of funding, has turned to cities and to states. So those groups are really, really important. And then Bikes Belong has developed, you know, three or four really good programs. We do a good job on government relations and government affairs, working to maximize federal funding, and some of that is through America Bikes. And then we also have the People for Bikes citizen campaign that now has just about 500,000 supporters. We've got a great grants program. We've got a new program called Green Lanes that is focusing on building protected, safe bikeways in big U.S. cities. And, you know, so we have to blend. It's a little bit complicated, but really at the end of the day, everything that all of our groups do, at least these three, is focused on making bicycling safer and stress-free for all Americans in all 50 states.
Well, I don't see any reason why the organization itself needs to lose any of those programs. It seems to me relying on one another might strengthen some of them.
Yeah, and, you know, there certainly is an advantage to taking multiple brands with multiple acronyms and simplifying and streamlining it and making it into one unified group that has one membership base, one internal and external communications network. We can probably be more clear, more powerful, engage more people, and, you know, part of this too will help with fundraising. We think that if there's one unified national brand for bicycling, that, you know, we've had pretty good success, you know, with Humana, the insurance company, and others, but we think this will attract all kinds of new sponsors.
Yeah, I can believe that it would. Do you have any idea of a possible place for headquartering it? Are you thinking D.C. or out where you are in Colorado?
Yeah, well, you know, I know only two things. One is that we're absolutely going to have a strong D.C. office.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah, and the other thing that I know is that we are lucky enough to be based in one of four platinum bike-friendly communities here in Colorado, and it's a pretty good place to ride a bike and a pretty good place to work. So, you know, I can't be sure, but so Washington for sure,
right.
But in terms of actual headquarters, don't know yet.
Well, how about a timetable? I know that you're going to be making specific announcements sometime in September.
Well, yeah, so the league has been around for 120 plus years, and the Alliance, you know, has a strong membership base, and, you know, Bikes Belong for 13 years, and really any decision to change the overall structure has to be approved by the board of directors and, you know, and the memberships of all three groups. And so we've set the end of September as a deadline for that. And, you know, it's not written in stone, but we've asked the league and the Alliance and Bikes Belong to decide, you know, can we do this by the end of September? And I guess our hope, our dream is that everybody says yes, it's
sure.
Ratified, and then we open the doors early in 2013. And, you know, today I'd say January 1, 2013, but I don't know that in the big scheme that it matters exactly what day. We know that we will benefit the sooner we get it done.
Sure. Have you started polling members? Are you getting feedback yet, besides from people like me who are going, rah, 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 we need to do this?
Yeah, so we sent an announcement out on February 22nd, and it was a simultaneous announcement that came from the Alliance, the League, and Bikes Belong. And, you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it, but I would certainly the reaction from our supporters was 100% positive.
Yeah, I can believe that.
I don't think it was 100% positive from Alliance members and League members, but I do think and you could ask Andy Clark or Jeff Miller, that it was more positive than anybody expected, and it was, you know, 9 or 10 to 1. This is a really good idea, with the one caveat being that the devil's in the details. You know, let's see how you set it up and what programs you have, and, you know, let's you know, reserving judgment but feeling good about the concept.
Well, one of my interviews coming up here is Rich Olkin.
Yes.
Which should be pretty interesting. I'm kind of interested. I haven't talked to him yet, so I'm interested to hear what his take is on the whole thing because, you know, he was at Bikes Belong from day one, as I remember.
Yes. You know, he was my predecessor here and did a great job of getting Bikes Belong started and has very deep family and business roots in the bike business.
Right.
And, you know, I have not spoken with Rich since February 22nd, but I'm sure he'll say, fantastic, this is amazing, because you have a potential, you have the potential to accomplish so much more as one unified team. And this is also an opportunity for us to clarify our vision and set some really good goals. And when I say really good goals, I'm talking about actual numbers, you know, what percentage of trips in the United States do we want to be taken by a bicycle.
Right.
And right now we're roughly at 1 nationwide, and, you know, I would say the number 5%, the question is a pretty good number, 5% by 2020, is that a lofty enough goal? Is that reasonable? You know, all kinds of numbers for participation, for safety, for trail miles and bikeways and underpasses and bridges. I mean, there are a lot of different things that we could measure, but one would be just participation and percentage of trips. So we'll do that as part of this whole exercise.
Well, I think the whole thing is awesome. It is a dream come true for me, having been in the business, well, I hate to say it's going to be coming up on 40 years not too long from now.
Wow.
But it's a vision that I just am so thrilled to hear about. I think it's awesome.
Well, that's great. And for, you know, for me, it's been, this is my 33rd year, and you know, many years as a magazine editor for Velo News,
right,
and Bicycling Magazine, and then last 20 as a bike advocate. And I couldn't be more excited about this, because I think it really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is what happens to the bicycling experience for Americans. And I'm pretty confident that if we do this right, anybody who rides a bike in the United States will benefit, as long as we keep our eye on that goal. And so far, everybody's been really good, and they've been thinking big and thinking long term. So I'm feeling very encouraged and very excited.
Well, me too. And I guess I'll see you in a couple of weeks at the summit. And if we have a chance, maybe we can talk some more.
Absolutely. Always enjoy it.
Well, thank you, Tim. Have
okay.
a great evening. Thanks for okay. taking time tonight.
Of course.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tim Blumenthal joined us from Boulder, Colorado, where he's the president of Bikes Belong.
Yes, he is.
All right, and getting ready to pull the organizations together.
I am, as you heard, it just was like,
yeah.
it almost makes me cry.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm so excited. I think it's awesome.
Well, we'll see what kind of programs and things that they roll out here in the next few months.
Well, they have to come to the conclusion that they're going to do this. It's going to be interesting to see how they meld it all and then come up with a new sort of umbrella name for it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bicycle yeah. Council.
Yeah, could be. Could be.
Anyway.
Hey, we've got a little time before the break here.
We do.
Let's try to squeeze in some news.
Okay, and you want to squeeze in a review of something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you do that?
So last fall we had Thomas Prenn from Cat Eye America on.
That's correct.
And he talked about a product called the Orbit. And he actually, I think, sent you a sample.
And I extended that sample to you.
He passed it on to me. And I couldn't ride at night last fall for a number of reasons. But
like, so, with a broken collarbone? That would be the main one?
Yeah, but I got out about a week ago after dark for the first time. And I tried these things. And let's just say you ain't getting them back. I hope they were a gift and not a loan.
From me to you, from okay. Thomas to me to you, they yeah. are a definite gift.
Yeah.
You like them.
So they're a little translucent housing that clips onto your spokes, doesn't require any tools, and it's got an LED inside, a couple of button batteries, and they basically just go round and around with the tire. So I put them on, and I told Jean, my wife, I said, you got to stand in the garage door. I'm going to go up the street, and I'm going to come back the house, past the house, and you tell me what they look like. So I come rolling down, and they're doing their thing. And
you should see the hand motions.
So I roll up, and she says, "Well, the circus is in town." I said, "Okay, that's
good.
Yeah, it is good.
I don't mind being on in the circus."
So you know, they're pretty light. The weight to safety ratio is pretty good.
Okay,
and you can clip them off, you know, very easily.
Right.
If you are not riding at night for a while, whatever, they go on and off.
Well, those are long-lasting batteries, so who cares, right?
Yeah, no, I'm saying you can take them on and off the bike.
Yeah, but why would you take them off?
If you wanted to, you know, if you were riding something
and you don't want to look geeky, is that your point?
Or if you wanted to be the absolute lightest you could be.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you didn't.
Grams.
Know. Right.
Right. Weenie. Graham weenie.
Yeah, so
right.
So I like those, and I think it's important to have some side-to-side visibility as well as front and back.
Oh, I do too. I think, in fact, that's probably more likely to be noticed even than back, because almost always we have something flashing behind us or the pedals reflect or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But side-to-side, you know what's going by when wheels are going around and you get shiny things
happening. Yeah, you got two orange circles going on. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So should we move on to some news?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, right now, 2012 Paris-Nice is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to believe that there's actually a video of this, but it was posted by a couple of people on Facebook. It's 22 seconds long. It's a video from the 1937 Paris-Nice. So they used fences on crossings for railroad instead of, you know, the things that go ding, 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 ding and come down like big arms, mm-hmm. and ding, ding, ding and go back
yeah.
up. Yeah, fences. So they moved the fences. So a train's coming on this Paris-Nice ride and all these riders are like jumping the fence and then taking off.
Mm.
I don't know where they got pictures of it, but it's pretty interesting. There is a video at nos.nl/video, and I'll bet you can probably search for it. It's a Netherlands organization, but it's really, really, really fun. It's I'm like incredulous that it's from 1937. Really good. Anyway, I have something to read that actually doesn't make me very happy. During NABS, these people, I don't understand. Belinky in Philadelphia built two cargo bikes for a couple out of Australia. The men's, believe it or not, is pink.
Okay.
Okay, but that's not the point. It's got a turquoise rack that covers the whole back of the bike, you know, to carry a surfboard.
Okay.
He was in San Francisco at 24th and Mission, and somebody stole it.
Oh, no.
So, yes, it's all over the internet. It's there are posters everywhere. But I figure it doesn't hurt to put it on the airwaves.
Sure.
But if you see this very strange Belinky, looks like a Pugsley. It's got giant wheels, you know, tires,
balloon
real
tires,
fat,
yeah.
You know, even fatter than balloon, just
mm-hmm.
giant tires. But you can't mistake it. It's very small. It'll only fit a small or extra small rider.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see it, go to Belinky's website. It's Belenky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right on the front page. And there is a reward. It would be nice that the United States would give this Australian back his bike. I would be very happy with that. So I just wanted to help that out. And it's upsetting to me that somebody would steal it. And they didn't I don't think hers was there. It was his. So that kind of made me unhappy. And this goes right along with what we're doing. Boehner's effort to move the House $260 billion highway bill lacks support. I don't think that's really news. But what is news is they've pretty much trashed it, and they're just waiting for the Senate highway bill. Speaker John Boehner, Republican Ohio, on Thursday said he plans to pass the Senate highway bill after an 11th-hour effort to take up the House bill this month faltered for the umpteenth time. I added the umpteenth time, by the way. Quote, as I told the members yesterday, the current plan is to see what the Senate can produce and to bring their bill up. Unquote. Boehner told reporters at his weekly news conference on Thursday. In the meantime, we're going to continue to have conversations with our members about a longer-term approach, which, frankly, most of our members want. But at this point in time, the plan is to bring up the Senate bill or something like it. Okay, I thought that was enough, but it did crack me up nonetheless.
We might bring this up or we might not. Or something else.
Or whatever.
And long term, but we really like a short term now.
Yeah. So I actually was in the speaker's office in 3 years ago at the Bike Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty clear from talking to the aide. You don't necessarily talk directly to the congressman or the senator, that he doesn't have much interest in bicycles. In fact, I suggested that maybe it would be good exercise and fun for he and his children, and they didn't like that either. I'm sorry. Anyway, this is a – go ahead.
Well, maybe that's why he seems to have a sour disposition.
He doesn't get any exercise.
He's not riding a bicycle.
That's
if he was
true.
Riding a bicycle, I'm sure he'd be in a better mood.
Right. He would have
– I don't know. Maybe he's a happy guy. He just doesn't seem very happy.
No, he doesn't.
To my mind.
He doesn't. All right. This is the last time we're going to ever mention this case, but – I'm glad to be able to report that the woman who hit Judge
Charles Henry,
the woman who hit Judge Henry back last year, was sentenced this week.
Yeah.
Kelly Cox was sentenced in Geauga County Common Pleas Court last Saturday, to 9.5 years in prison for hitting and killing Charles Chip Henry while he was riding his bicycle last May. Cox, 42, of Troy Township, has pleaded guilty to aggravated homicide. She was sentenced by visiting Judge Paul Mitrovich of Lake County Common Pleas Court. Now, I happened to see on television her sentencing,
mm-hmm.
and he basically said, "You do not have remorse." He was not real kind to her.
Hmm.
Henry, 53, of Auburn Township, he was a beloved person, a juvenile and probate judge since 1993, was riding on Rapids Road in Troy Township when he was struck by Cox's car. Oh, Highway Patrol investigators and Geauga County prosecutors said Cox had a blood alcohol level of more than 3 times the legal limit when she hit Henry. And remember, at first she said, "No, I haven't been drinking." Or taking Vicodin, which somebody else said.
She also left the scene and didn't call 911.
Right.
Yeah.
And then said she thought she hit a deer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's over. So that's the last reporting of Kelly Cox and all of that.
Yeah. Although the article on the News Herald website, you know, about the sentencing.
Yeah.
Just like clockwork, all the bicycle haters come out of the woodwork and have to put their comments down.
Really?
Bicycles don't belong on the road, blah, 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 all the same old tired stuff. It's like these people sort of just sit and wait for their opportunity to post the same crap.
Right. Yeah. That's
anyway.
So when a candidate uses cycling to get elected, what a concept, huh?
Mm-hmm.
San Diego mayoral candidate Nathan Fletcher released the latest of his position papers last Wednesday, his plan for turning San Diego into, quote, one of the most bicycle-friendly cities in the world. It is titled Cycling to the Future, Creating New Transportation Options for San Diego. And he goes on to just enumerate the things he thinks should happen. And his comment that cracked me up and I thought was good was, Portland should be saying it wants to be like San Diego.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that would be very, very cool. He has 2 major goals for his plan. Increase the number of San Diegans cycling to work and school to 121,000 by 2020 from the current 65,000. According to Fletcher, this would eliminate 11 million vehicle trips a year and remove 37,000 tons of carbon emissions from the atmosphere. His number 2 goal is to reduce the number of vehicle-related fatalities and injuries to cyclists to below the national average. So I think that that's awesome. And if I lived in San Diego, I'd vote for him because
okay.
He's right up my alley. So that's all the news there is to fit to talk about this week.
Hey, I have one more.
Yeah.
I just remembered that I didn't share this with you, but I should have. This is from Seattle, from The Stranger.
I like The Stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mayor Mike McShwin, you know, Mike McGinn there.
McShwin, right. He rides everywhere.
They put a Nickerson Street on a controversial road diet. They reduced the number of lanes from 4 to 3 to slow down speeding drivers and make the street safer for cyclists and pedestrians. And after a little bit of trial with this, they said that the average road speed on Nickerson Street dropped from 42 miles an hour to 33 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. Okay.
So we're still over the speed
They're still
limit.
Speeding, but not by quite as much.
Right.
Collisions were down 23% compared to the previous 5-year average. Average weekly traffic volumes have remained roughly the same. So drivers didn't change their commuting habits, which was one of the big things they said when they were talking about doing this, is that no one will go there anymore because of, you know, the narrowing of the lanes.
And that obviously
was not true. That's not true.
What about congestion, though, in terms of if you've got the same number of people in one less lane?
Well,
did it take long? Well, it was slower, so it did take longer.
Took a little bit longer. Let's see. Speeds are down in both directions. The percent of drivers speeding 10 miles or more over the speed limit is down by 92% for westbound traffic and 96% for eastbound traffic. And to put that in perspective, they say safety-wise, a pedestrian hit at 30 miles an hour by a car has a 55% chance of survival. If you are a pedestrian and you're hit at 40 miles an hour, the odds are down to 15%.
Wow.
So your chances of surviving as a pedestrian double with simply a 10-mile-an-hour reduction in car speed.
Okay, then.
So.
Well, that's pretty cool.
There you go, yeah.
Let's tell the mayor. Mayor McSwyn, that we're very happy. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's nice to see something.
Well, measurable, number one.
Right, exactly. And that it works, you know, as they thought as opposed to as all the doom and gloomers thought.
Exactly.
All right, we've got to take a short break.
We can do
and
that.
When we come back, we're going to talk to someone who's written a very interesting book.
A lovely book. The Argyle Armada. We'll speak with Mark Johnson.
All right, that's right after this on The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
On Saturday, March 24th, WJCU is having a few people over to our house, and you're invited. It's 88.7's second annual open house, starting at noon and rolling on to 5 p.m. Come on down to see us. Meet WJCU show hosts, nosh on snacks, compete for door prizes, and be sociable. So save the date, March 24th, for a visit to our house. More info at WJCU.org.
I'm Greg Priddy.
And I'm Diane Lees.
And we are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. And as promised, we're going to interview a very interesting author.
Yes, we are, from Del Mar, California, one of the coolest places out there. Mark Johnson, author of The Argyle Armada. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. You live in one of my favorite places.
For us, people don't get on their bikes when it's overcast here. It's that beautiful. It's cloudy outside. I'm not riding today.
So besides your athleticism, you're a great academic and a photographer and a writer. And you lead a pretty fascinating life, it seems.
Well, I try to. You only live once.
Yeah.
So you might as well go full on, right?
I think so. And before this assignment, and we're going to talk about the book mainly, The Argyle Armada, what was your favorite gig before you got to sit in with Garmin Cervello for a year?
Well, this is going to be kind of funny, but in terms of photography, one of the most fascinating recent gigs that I've done is actually doing quite a bit of shooting some water treatment plants in Northern California, Arizona, because I came to have an understanding of how we get clean water, and it's actually pretty amazing.
Well, okay, I'm going to ask you to explain that because we live on Lake Erie, which, you know, is alleged, it's somewhat clean, but we do have water treatment plants right off the lake, but we don't have a scarcity of water here.
Right.
So what did you find so fascinating about getting clean water?
Well, just I had no idea how complicated it was, the actual process of taking water out of the Colorado River, where it usually comes from here.
Right.
Which all the way upstream, people are putting their toilet water into the Colorado River, and so we have to clean it and make it clean enough so that it's drinkable. And just the technology that goes into creating clean water is fascinating. And it's a great photographic challenge because doing architectural photography is a completely different discipline than shooting cycling because everything is staged and set up and takes a lot of time, whereas cycling, it's instantaneous and there's a lot more luck involved.
Sure.
Than architectural photography.
So for whom was the photography on the water treatment plants? Who was looking for that photography?
Was for a construction firm.
Got it.
That does a lot of water treatment plant stuff, and they needed photography for their marketing materials.
So given that, how did you take so much time to spend with Garmin Cervello? How did that gig come about?
Well, they approached me in 2007 to license some photographs because I had some photos of some of their riders on my website, and they wanted to license some of those photos for their own internal marketing purposes.
Okay.
And then they found out that I'm a writer and an editor, and they said, oh, we need help doing our marketing communications work, too. Can you help us? And so that's when I started freelancing for them. And then I proposed to them, I said, hey, if I can get a publisher and get this project financed, would you give me access to the team for a year? And so we ran it by Jonathan Vauders and Matt Johnson, who's the president of the team, and they said, yeah, go for it. So then VeloPress greenlit the project, and I got the funding in line, and then it happened. So I was with the team from January of 2011, physically with the team,
right,
all the way through November 2011 in Boulder when they unveiled their 2012 squad.
Wow. So you spent literally 11 months, embedded with the team.
Yeah, and the way it would work is I would go, so for instance, in January, I went to Girona where the team was having their team training camp, and I stayed there for a month. Then I would come home. Then I went back to Belgium for the Spring Classics, which are in March and April, so
right.
I was there for a month. Then I would come home, and then I went back, then to tour California. So basically, I would just go and embed myself with the team at the biggest races throughout the year. And to come up with that list of races, I sat down with Jonathan Vauders and said, where are the races that you think the team is going to do best? And, man, it worked out all right, that's for sure.
Well, obviously, he knows his team. And from reading the little I was able to read, since all my information came really late before our interview, he really is an interesting guy, Jonathan Vauders.
Yeah, at the beginning of the book, I said, what do you want your legacy to be? And he was kind of surprised by the question. I'm not sure that he had even thought about the notion of Jonathan Vauders having a legacy. But he concluded that he wants to be a catalyst. He said if he can look back and be seen as the guy who just kept poking the cycling establishment and encouraged it to change, and by change, he wants to see a more stable cycling establishment, whereas teams aren't disappearing from year to year. The riders have more stability and predictability in their lives. There's more predictability for the team owners, everyone involved with the sport. Whereas now it's a very, very fragile sport. And it perplexes him because the sport is hugely popular on the road. I mean, the number of people riding is enormous. There's as many, I've said this before, there are as many people riding their bikes today in the United States as there are golfers, tennis players, and snow skiers combined.
Boy, yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah, but when you think of what are the big, big financially stable sports, it's golf and tennis, and you always associate those as the sports with the most participants. They don't even come close to cycling. Yet, the sport of, and when you look at the professions of tennis and golf, they're very well established, and sponsors are throwing money at those sports. It's not the case with cycling. So there's a really big disjunction between the on-the-ground popularity of the sport and the fragility of the profession.
Well, let me ask you a question that would not have occurred to me had I not just gotten off of the phone with Tim Blumenthal.
Uh-huh.
I assume you know that the Bikes Belong and the LAB and the Alliance for Biking and Walking are now trying to umbrella the organization. If that were the case, it seems to me it might just benefit the professional end of the sport too, having that many more people, in one organization as opposed to some splintered organization.
Well, I think one way it could help is in terms of presenting the market, the potential market to advertisers. Where it doesn't help is how the sport is governed and run, because that's really done out of Switzerland and
right.
Europe. And it doesn't have much to do with what's going on here in the United States on the ground. So,
yeah. Well, I do want to talk about the UCI, but let's talk a little bit more about the book first. You were given pretty much free rein while you were with the team each time. And did you have a very specific layout for the book before you actually wrote it? Or did it sort of develop month by month as you went down to the different races?
Well, the structure was was dictated by the races.
Okay.
Followed. So it's, the chapters are really divided. I have two chapters in the Spring Classics. One is the Cobbled Classics, and that's Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix.
Right.
And then the other chapter is on the Ardennes Classics, which are the hillier races in the southern part of Belgium, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, and Amstel Gold Race, which is in Holland. And then it's just from there it goes on race by race. The final chapter is on the business of cycling, and that's where I really try and round up a lot of voices from race organizers to Pat McQuaid, who's the UCI, he runs the UCI, to Jonathan Vauders, to Doug Ellis, who bankrolls the team, and really collected their perspectives on where the sport is as a profession and where it needs to go to be more stable. And to me, I think that's the most fascinating chapter, because the writers you often don't hear the writers' voices. You know, when you read the blogs and the cycling websites, you hear Pat McQuaid and you hear Jonathan Vauders and other team managers.
Right.
But you really don't hear the cyclists hold forth. So, you know, from Christian Vanneveld to Tyler Farah to Tor Hushoff, I was really able to draw them in and collect their feelings about their role as the primary actors in a massive sporting spectacle, but more or less, they're pretty powerless, even though they're the stars.
Let me take a moment to remind our listeners we're speaking with Mark Johnson, who is the author of The Argyle Armada. He spent a whole season going with the Garmin Cervelo team, traveling in 2011 from January through November. So it's pretty well known that Garmin Cervelo isn't the best finance team on the road. But yet they had just a stellar season in 2011. So money doesn't buy victory. What makes this team work so hard and have such good results, do you think?
Well, I think part of it is because Vauders is just a good judge of riders. He unfortunately is in the situation of the Oakland A's. He's like Billy Beane. He doesn't have much money relative to bigger teams like BMC. His budget is half of theirs. So rather than hiring superstars like a Contador or a Cavendish or someone like that or Philippe Gilbert, he basically hires less expensive riders but who are very reliable and consistently deliver throughout the year and who steadily bring in a lot of the UCI points, which the UCI uses to rank the teams.
Right.
Through the year. So he's just he's kind of a smart buyer, and after having been with the team for a year, none of the guys really have big egos. I mean, they all seem pretty willing to sacrifice for one another, and Vauders really drives that home that they all float together or they sink together, and there's really no room for super individuals on a team.
It obviously shows up in the results. You know, that's slow and steady and just accumulate points, as you said.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So do you have one or two great stories from the 2011 season that just stand out that you just love to tell?
You know, one thing that struck me is how hard the mechanics and the sports staff work. I mean, you tend to think of, you see these guys on TV and you go, wow, what a glorious job that would be to be a team mechanic.
Oh, no, it's not.
Or a soigneur. The soigneur, they're the people who do massage therapy every night. They make all the riders' foods and on the road food. They wash all their clothes every night. When I was with the team at the Tour of Flanders, you know, the mechanics would be up first thing in the morning, and they would still be working when it would get dark. Every time the riders get off their bikes, they hand that bike to the mechanics, and even if they've gone out for an hour spin, the mechanics wash that bike, clean it, lube it. And I asked one of the mechanics, a New Zealander, Chris Withington, whether he ever gets weekends off, and he laughed at me, and he said, no, not since January, and that was in April.
Right.
So they really work relentlessly, and they're very attentive to details in a way that I would have never imagined. So there was a Wednesday race where Tyler Farah crashed, and I was shooting pictures of his bike, which had been damaged. And Jeff, who's the lead mechanic, he came up to me. He said, "Mark, you got to destroy those pictures." And I'm thinking, well, what's the big deal? But he was just basically being attentive to the fact that their job is to help represent these sponsors.
Right.
And just even though it was not a fault of the machine itself,
right,
that was just an interesting picture. He's always thinking ahead of, okay, part of my job here is keeping these bikes in good working order, but it's also representing this team to the public. So
it's interesting. How many mechanics does the team have?
There are six.
Wow.
If I recall correctly, yeah. And then at most of the big races, there's usually three mechanics. In addition to taking care of the bikes, they also wash the cars and vacuum the cars every day.
Sure.
The Soigneurs, it's amazing because the Soigneurs will take the riders' dirty clothes after every training rider race, and the next morning at breakfast, they deliver those clothes to them, cleaned and folded.
Wow.
So the staff's job is basically to eliminate as many non-bike-related, non-training-related worries from the riders as they can. So that all the riders really have to do ideally is ride their bikes, recover, sleep, and eat.
And that's my next question, and that is, what about all this food? I mean, you have people now who are vegetarians and vegans, and I'm not eating this, and I do eat that, and it's changed since the Eddie B days.
The only really picky rider that I saw was Zabriskie. And at the Tour of Colorado, the USA Pro Cycling Challenge, one of the chefs, they had two traveling chefs with them at that race. And I asked him about that because Zabriskie was a vegan. I'm not
right.
Sure if he still is. But he said, yeah, Dave is very particular about his food. In fact, he wants to know the provenance of the fish when we give him fish. He wants to know.
Give him a poll.
Where did it come from? But I think the food that the team gets is so delicious and so good that
right.
There's not much room for being picky. But that said, they don't have the team chefs at all the races.
Right.
Simply because it's expensive.
Sure.
So it was only at the bigger races that they had the traveling chefs with them. Another standout incident from the year that comes to mind is the day that Johan van Summeren crashed into a piece of road furniture at the Tour of Spain. And he essentially impaled himself on this big plastic road divider. And both the team doctor and the race doctor were imploring him to get into the ambulance because he was bleeding and he had sort of mashed his private area, and he was in no condition to ride his bike, but he said nope. He demanded the bike, but before he got back in his bike, he asked for a bag of ice, shoved the bag of ice down his bib shorts, went on to finish the race. And this wasn't just any stage either. This was the stage they went up the Angliru, which is one of the most brutal climbs in pro cycling. It's an absolutely wicked climb in Cantabria in northern Spain.
I think these guys psych themselves out, and it's like, I'm going to finish no matter what. I've seen it. I've seen exactly the same thing in a triathlon we had here. Guy fell, broke his shoulder. We chased him for 56 miles, and then I wouldn't let him start the run. I said, your race is over, dude. We're done, you know?
Well, I have a photo in the book of Johan going up this climb, and you can see there's blood on his fingers and blood on his elbow. And his face is just racked with pain. But I asked him how it went afterwards, and he said, well, it's a crummy job, but it's a job.
Interesting. That's an interesting response. whatever. Anyway, so what do you think we're going to see from Garmin-Cervelo in 2012? Do you have, obviously you are endeared to the team in some ways, so you'll still follow them.
Yeah, obviously not as close. And to be clear, the team didn't commission this, and they weren't paying me to do this, nor did Garmin.
Right.
So that certainly gave me a degree of editorial freedom that I wouldn't have had if they had been commissioning this. So
yeah, it came out of a competitor group, right?
Yes,
okay.
Velopress. Publisher, yeah.
Okay.
I think the guy who's most interesting on a number of levels is Thomas Decker, who is a confessed doper. And he was a three-time Dutch national time trial champion. He's placed top 10 in the Ardennes Classics. He's placed third at the Tour of the Basque Country, which is one of the toughest stage races there is next to the Tour de France. But he got busted for EPO, and he confessed, sat out for 2 years, and then Vaughters brought him back on with his development team last year, tested him all year, and he's clean, and Vaughters obviously thinks he's going to stay that way. But I think Thomas Decker is an unbelievable talent who Vaughters probably got for nothing because he was so tainted.
Right.
So he's going to get a lot of value out of him. But, you know, it is a risk because, you know, the guy doped once. So, and that's something that, boy, I think is got to be tough for Vaughters because he has to really be a judge of these riders' characters because he can't be in their rooms and in their apartments all the time. And one of these guys could make a mistake at any time. And if he did, it's not just going to end that rider's career. Vaughters tells these guys over and over again that if one of you guys make a mistake and dope, it's not just going to end your career. It's going to end this entire team.
Exactly.
So it's puts a lot of pressure on him and who he hires. But I think that's going to be great following how Thomas Decker does this year.
Well, one of the first things I read was that Vaughters fired Matt White, and it was for making an approved decision about sending somebody to a doctor he didn't care for, and he just didn't have a choice. The way Vaughters saw it, he had no choice but to say, look, this does not stand, and you're gone.
Yeah, the way it works with this team is that they can only go for any medical issue. They can only go to doctors within the team. They're employed by the team, and that way, you know, any advice that they're getting when it comes to nutrition, supplements like amino acids or something like that, vitamins, they are only getting from those doctors. So in this case, Matt White had innocently, I think, referred a past rider to another doctor because it was a thing of convenience. That doctor was close to where this rider was, and there were no team doctors around. But it was enough for them to say, you know, you can't do that. And I talked to Dan Martin, who's a 25-year-old Irish rider, about that, what he thought, because this is back in January, right when it had happened. And he said, you know, Matt White was a very well-respected part of this team, and he contributed a lot to the team. And so it was a real drag that he went. But he said, on the other hand, it really sends a message to us that the rules apply evenly to everyone. And we've all got to play by those rules, and if you don't, you're out of here.
Well, I have to say that I only, as I said originally, read a short bit of the book, but I really enjoy your writing style. And
well, thank you.
The book is really beautifully written, everything I've read so far. I'd love to have the real book in my hands. I got galleys instead of the real book, so I can't wait to actually see it. But would you let our listeners know, it is now on the stands, it was published March 2nd, how they can get a copy of the Argyle Armada?
So you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble online, and it'll also be in your local bookstore. If it's not there, ask them and they'll get it, or bike shops. And you can go to ArgyleArmada.com, and from that web page we've got links to all the different websites you can get it. And you can also get it from my own personal website. I'm selling signed copies from my website, which is ironstring.com. So ArgyleArmada.com, that'll get you to all of the retailers.
And what is on the horizon for you now, Mark?
Well, I'm pretty busy right now just aligning publicity stuff. I'm going to be going doing book signings pretty much every night throughout the Tour of California, Tour of Colorado. This weekend I'm going to be up in Seattle for the Seattle Bike Expo. I'm going to do a couple talks there.
Good.
And then I'll be out in the East Coast in June. I'm going to do something at the Fitchburg Longo stage race. The
what?
Last weekend in June, July. So a lot of staying busy selling this book.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me on the show this evening, and I'm really looking forward to reading the whole book in its real hard copy form, because I really enjoy reading these cycling books. But the Garmin-Cervelo team is sort of a nice thing to be proud of here in the U.S., so I'm really excited to read it. And thank you so much for taking the time to actually spend 11 months with the team and write this book.
Yeah, I was very fortunate, and I was grateful for Waters and also Doug Ellis, who's the owner, to have the confidence and trust in me to just say,
I think you did a great job. It's going to be fine. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the time.
All righty, Mark.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Mark Johnson from Del Mar, California.
It's beautiful. There's actually a racetrack there, and a lot of people go to Del Mar for horse racing, but I go to sit in this nice little coffee shop and look out over the ocean and go, this is nice. This is really nice.
Very nice. Well, it must have been very exciting for him to be embedded with a team like Garmin and get all kind of access like that.
As I said, I haven't read the whole book yet because it wasn't in my possession, but everything I've read, it's beautifully written. Really, really nice. Okay. I like nice literature.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. when you get the real book, pass me those galleys. I'll take a gander at it if you got them.
Maybe. If you're lucky.
I'll give them back
they're
to
online.
You.
They're online. No, they're online.
Oh, okay.
No, it's an online thing.
Oh, okay.
Just, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we will see you in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yes, because do you know what next Saturday is, Diane?
Yes, it's my cousin's birthday.
It's only the most important day of the whole year.
Oh, my. Really? Are you green? Are you Irish?
I'm part Irish.
Okay,
I'm enough.
It must be St. Patrick's Day.
It certainly is. St. Patrick's Day falls on a Saturday this year, and I have some other duties here at the station, so I will not be able to help bring you an outspoken cyclist next Saturday. Uncle Fred Dolan and I will be here bright and early at 6 a.m., and we're locked in until midnight playing Irish music all day and all night.
I'm not sure I can do that.
So
more power to you.
It's more fun than you can imagine. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Okay.
And, but that means that we're preempted.
We are.
Next Saturday. So we're going to take a week off from both the podcast and the on-air show. But never fear, we will be back with a show, although you're going to be out of town again, but we're coming back with a show.
I'm going to the bike summit, remember?
Right, you're going to the bike summit,
yeah.
But we'll have a show anyway on the 24th.
We will, and one of the guests on the 24th is the venerable and somewhat curmudgeonly Bruce Gordon.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed. All right. So it will be worth listening, and we will have Rich Olkin, who has a history in the bicycle business that goes back before he was even born. Just an awesome guy.
All right. Well,
his family has been in the bicycle business since the 1930s.
I'm going to say that's a pretty good feat if you can start in the bike business before your birth.
Oh, yeah. It is. Well.
All right. Well, you're welcome to join us for Irish music in a week on the 17th of March.
Yep.
Here on 88.7 or on WJCU.org, because we will stream that live. And if that's not your cup of tea, more cycling stuff coming at you on the 24th at 5:30 Eastern.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes, indeed. And have a great 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.